pattern of ruin, and within the intricately stitched patterns of the bright, destructive threads of fire, Kira could see figures of humans portrayed, people destroyed, their tiny villages crumbling, and later, even larger, much more splendid towns burned and ravished by fiery destruction. In some places on the robe, there was a feeling of entire worlds ending. Yet always, there would emerge, nearby, new growth, new people. Ruin, rebuilding, ruin again, regrowth. Kira followed the scenes with her hand as larger and greater cities appeared and larger, greater destruction took place. The cycle was so regular that its pattern took on a clear form, an up-and-down movement, wave-like. From the tiny corner where it began, where the first ruin came, it enlarged upon itself. The fires grew as the villages grew. All of them were still tiny, created from the smallest stitches and combinations of stitches, but she could see their pattern of growth and how each time the ruin was worse and the rebuilding more difficult. But the sections of serenity were exquisite. Miniature flowers of countless hues flourished in meadows streaked with golden threaded sunlight. Human figures embraced. The pattern of the peaceful times felt immensely tranquil compared to the tortured chaos of the others. Tracing with her finger the white and pink-tinged clouds against pale skies of gray or green, Kira wished again for blue, the color of calm. What was it Annabella had said? That they had blue yonder? What did that mean? Who were they? And where was yonder? More unanswered questions. Great sheets of rain spattered against the window, distracting her. Kira sighed and watched the trees bend and sway in the wind. Thunder muttered in the distance. She wondered where Matt was, what he was doing in this weather. She knew that ordinary people, those who lived near the place where she and her mother had shared their cot, would be indoors today. The men sullen and edgy, the women complaining loudly because weather kept them from their usual chores. Tykes, confined, would be fighting and then wailing in response to swift, backhanded slaps from their mothers. Her own life with her soft-spoken, widowed mother had been different. But it had set her apart, too, and made others, like Vandara, hostile. Kira? She heard Thomas's voice and his knock at her door. Come in. He came and stood by her window, eyeing the rain. I was just wondering what Matt's up to in this weather, Kira said. Thomas began to laugh. Well, I can answer that. He's up to finishing my breakfast. He arrived early this morning, dripping wet. He said his mother threw him out because he was noisy and troublesome. I think he just wanted breakfast, though.
Branch, too?
Branch, too, of course. As if in response, they heard the tap-tapping of the dog's feet in the corridor. Then Branch appeared in the doorway, his head cocked, ears up, bent tail wagging exuberantly. Kira knelt and scratched behind his ear. Kira? Thomas was still staring through the window at the rain.
Hmm?
She looked up from the dog. I heard it again in the night. I'm certain of it this time. The sound of a child crying. It seemed to come from the floor below. She looked at him and saw that he was concerned. I wonder, Kira, he said hesitantly, would you go with me to explore a bit? I suppose it could just be the sound of wind. It was true that outside the wind was relentless. Tree branches lashed the side of the building and torn leaves whirled away. The sound of the storm, however, was nothing like the sound of a crying child.
Maybe an animal? Kira suggested. I've heard cats yowling so that they sound like babies with colicky bellies.
Cats? Thomas repeated dubiously. Well, maybe.
Or a young goat? They make a crying sound.
Thomas shook his head. It wasn't a goat.
Well, no one ever said we couldn't explore, Kira commented. Not to me, anyway.
Nor me.
All right, then. I'll go with you. The light's not good for working this morning, anyway.
She stood.
Branch wriggled with anticipation. What about Matt? I suppose we should take him along.
Take me where? Matt appeared in the doorway, damp-haired and barefoot with crumbs on his chin, jam on the edges of his mouth, and wearing a too large woven shirt belonging to Thomas. Shall we be having an adventure?
Matt? Kira remembered her intention to ask him. Have you ever seen a beast? A real one?
Matt's face lighted. Billions and billions! He made a beast face, teeth exposed. He roared, and his dog jumped away from him in alarm. Kira rolled her eyes and looked at Thomas. Here, Branchy.
Matt, his beast disguise abandoned, squatted beside the dog who came forward and sniffed him.
Some smearies for you.
He grinned as the dog licked breakfast remains from his face.
Yes, we'll have ourselves an adventure, Kira told him.
She laid the protective cover over the robe.
We thought we'd explore a bit. We've never been on the floor below this one.
Matt's eyes widened in delight at the idea of an exploration.
I heard a noise last night, Thomas explained. Probably nothing, but we thought we'd go take a look. Noise don't never be nothing, Matt pointed out.
Quite rightly, Kira thought.
Well, it's probably nothing important, Thomas amended. But maybe it'd be interesting, Matt said eagerly.
Together, followed by the dog, the three started down the corridor toward the stairs. Chapter 13. Usually Branch scampered eagerly back and forth, leading the way, then circling back. This morning he was more cautious and followed behind. The thunder was still grumbling outside, and the hallway was dimly lighted. Thomas led the way. The dog's toenails clicked on the tiles. Matt's bare feet moved silently beside him, and the only other sounds were Kira's walking stick, which made a muted thump with each step, and the dragging of her twisted leg. Like the floor above, where they lived, this was simply an empty corridor lined with closed wooden doors. Thomas turned a corner. Then he jumped back, as if he'd been startled by something. The others, even the dog, froze.
Shh! Thomas gestured for silence with his finger to his mouth.
Ahead, around the corner, they heard footsteps. Then a knock, the opening of a door, and a voice. The voice and the inflection of the words, though the words themselves were not clear, sounded familiar to Kira.
It's Jameson,
she mouthed silently to Thomas. He nodded, agreeing, and peered around the corner. It occurred to Kira that Jameson had been her defender, had been the one responsible for her being here at all in this new life, so there was really no reason to huddle here in the dim hallway, hiding from him. Yet she was oddly fearful. She tiptoed forward and leaned beside Thomas. They could see that one of the doors was open. An indistinct murmur of voices came from within. One voice was Jameson's. The other was that of a child. The child cried briefly. Jameson spoke. Then the child, surprisingly, began to sing. Its clear, high voice soared. No words, just the voice, almost instrument-like in its clarity. It rose, leveled at a high note, and hovered there for a long moment. Kira felt something tug at her clothing. She looked down and saw Matt beside her, wide-eyed, pulling at her skirt. She motioned to him to stay silent. Then the singing broke off abruptly, and the child cried again. They heard Jameson's voice. It was harsh now. Kira had never heard him speak in that way. The door slammed shut, and the voices were muted. Matt was still tugging at her, and Kira leaned down so that he could whisper what he had to say.
It's me friend, he said urgently. Well, not really me friend, 'cause me and my mates don't like girl tykes none, but I knowed her. She lived in the fen.
Thomas was listening, too.
The one who was singing? He asked.
Matt nodded enthusiastically.
Her name be Jo. She always be singing in the fen. I didn't never hear her cry like that, none. Shh.
Kira tried to quiet Matt, but he had a difficult time whispering.
Let's go back, she suggested. We can talk in my room.
Branch led now, happy to be retreating and enthusiastic about the possibility of more food back where breakfast had been. Stealthily, they climbed the stairs and returned. Safe in Kira's quarters, Matt perched on the bed with his bare feet dangling and told him about the girl who sang. She be littler than me, he said. He jumped briefly to the floor and held his own hand level with his shoulder. She be about this high. And all the peoples in the fen, they get so happy hearing her sing. He climbed back onto the bed. Branch jumped up beside him and curled on Kira's pillow.
But why is she here? Kira asked, puzzled.
Matt gave an exaggerated shrug. She be an orphan now. Her mom and pa, they died, he explained.
Both of them at the same time?
Kira and Thomas looked at each other. They both knew loss, but had it happened again, to another tyke? Matt nodded importantly. He liked being the messenger, the bringer of information. First, her mom gets the sickness, and then, when draggers take her mom to the field, and her pa go to watch the spirit? Kira and Thomas nodded. Well, Matt said, making a dramatically sad face. Her pa be so sad at the field, sitting there, that he taken a big pointy stick and stab hisself through the heart. That's what them all said, anyways, he added, seeing the shocked looks his story had produced.
But he had a tyke. He had a little girl, Kira said, finding it unbelievable that a father would do such a thing.
Matt shrugged again. He considered that. Maybe he didn't like her none, he suggested. Then after a moment he frowned and said, But how could he not like her none when she sings so good? And how did she get here? Thomas asked. What is she doing here? I've been told they give her away to someone who had a craving for more tykes, Matt said.
Kira nodded. Orphans always go to someone else.
Unless, Thomas said slowly.
Unless what?
Kira and Matt asked together. He pondered that. Unless they sing, he said at last.
Jameson came to Kira's room, as he always did, later in the day. Outside, the rain still fell. Matt, undaunted, had gone off with his dog to find his mates, wherever they might be in such weather. Thomas had returned to his own quarters to work, and Kira, too, with extra lamps lighted by the tender, had settled to her task, stitching carefully throughout the afternoon. The interruption, when Jameson knocked on her door, was welcome. The tender brought tea, and they sat companionably together in the room while the rain spattered against the windows. As usual, he examined her work carefully. His face was the same creased, pleasant face she had known now for many weeks. His voice was courteous and friendly, as together they scrutinized the folds of the outstretched robe. Yet the memory of the harsh sounds of his murmured speech in the room below prevented Kira from asking him about the singing child.
"Your work is very fine," Jameson told her. He leaned forward, looking carefully at the section she had just completed, where she had meticulously matched the subtle differences of several yellows and filled in a background area with tiny knotted stitches that formed a texture. "Better than your mother's, although hers was excellent," he added.
"She taught you the stitches?" Kira nodded. "Yes, most of them."
She didn't tell him how others seemed simply to come to her untaught. It seemed boastful to speak of it.
"And Annabella, the dyes," she added. "I'm using many of her threads still, but I'm beginning now to make my own when I'm at her cot."
"She knows all there is, the old woman," Jameson said. He looked at Kira's leg with apparent concern. "The walk is not too hard for you? One day we'll have the fire pit and the pots here for you. I'm thinking of preparing a place just below." He gestured toward the window, indicating an area between the building and the edge of the woods beyond.
"No, I'm strong, but..."
She hesitated. "Yes?" Sometimes I've been fearful on the path, Kira told him. The forest is so close all around.
There's nothing to be afraid of there.
I do fear beasts, she confessed.
As you should. But stay on the path always. The beasts will not come near the path. His voice was as reassuring as it had been the day of her trial.
I heard growling once, Kira confided, shuddering a little at the memory of it.
There's nothing to fear if you don't stray.
Annabella said the same thing. She told me there was nothing to fear.
She speaks with four-syllable wisdom.
But Jameson?
For some reason, Kira hesitated to tell him this. Perhaps she didn't want to question the old woman's knowledge.
But now, feeling reassured by Jameson's interest and concern, she told him the startling thing that the old dyer had said with such certainty. She said that there are no beasts. He looked at Kira oddly. The expression on his face seemed a mixture of astonishment and anger.
No beasts? She said that?
There be no beasts, Kira repeated. She said it just that way several times.
Jameson laid the section of robe he'd been examining back down on the table. She's very old, he said firmly. It's dangerous for her to speak that way. Her mind is beginning to wander.
Kira looked at him dubiously. For weeks now she had worked with the dyer. The lists of plants, the many characteristics of each, the details of the dyeing procedures, so much complex knowledge, all of it was clear and complete. Kira had seen no sign, no hint of a wandering mind. Might the old woman know something that no one else, even someone with the status of Jameson, knew? Have you seen beasts? Kira asked him hesitantly.
Many, many times. The woods are filled with them, Jameson said. Never stray past the village limits. Do not go beyond the path.
Kira looked at him. His expression was hard to discern, but his voice was firm and certain.
Don't forget, Kira, he continued. I saw your father taken by beasts. It was a hideous thing. Terrible.
Jameson sighed and patted her hand sympathetically. Then he turned to leave. You are doing a fine job, he said again, appreciatively. Thank you, Kira murmured. She put her hand, still feeling his touch, into her pocket. Her special scrap of cloth lay folded there. She felt no comfort from it. As the door closed behind Jameson, she stroked the cloth, seeking its solace, but it seemed to withdraw from her touch, almost as if it were trying to warn her of something. The rain still fell steadily. Through it, she thought for a moment that she could hear the child sob on the floor below. Chapter 14. The sun was shining in the morning, but Kira woke groggy after a fitful sleep. Following an early breakfast, she tied her sandals carefully, anticipating the walk to Annabella's. Maybe the clear, cooler air after the rain would wake her a bit and make her feel better. Her head ached. Thomas's door was closed. He was probably still asleep. There were no sounds either from the floor below. Kira made her way out of doors, relishing the breeze that lingered after the storm, and was pine-scented from trees that were still glistening and wet. It blew her hair away from her face, and the misery of her sleepless night began to subside. Leaning on her stick, Kira made her way to the place where she ordinarily turned from the village and entered the woods on the path. It was quite near the weaving shed.
Kira!
A woman's voice called to her from the shed, and she saw that it was Marlena, already at the loom so early. Kira smiled, waved, and detoured to greet the woman.
We miss you. Them tykes that clean up for us now are worthless, horrid lazy, and one stole my lunch yesterday.
Marlena scowled her outrage. Her feet slowed on the treadle, and Kira knew that she was eager to chat and gossip.
That be him now, that wicked tyke.
A familiar wet nose touched Kira's ankle. She reached down to scratch Branch and saw Matt grinning at her from behind the corner of the weaving shed.
You there, Marlena called angrily, and he drew back to hide.
Marlena, Kira asked, remembering that the weaving woman lived in the fen. Did you ever know a girl tyke named Joe?
Joe?
The woman was still peering toward the shed corner, hoping to catch a glimpse of Matt and scold him.
You there,
she called again, but Matt was too sly and too clever to respond.
Yes, she used to sing.
Ah, the singing tyke. Yes, I knowed her. Not her name, though, but her singing, we all knowed that. Like a bird it was.
What happened to her?
Marlena shrugged. Her feet began to move slowly again on the treadle.
She be tooken off. They give her off to somebody, I guess. She be orphaned, I heard.
She leaned forward and whispered loudly.
Some said her receive the songs by magic. Nobody teached her. The songs, they just come.
Her feet paused. She gestured to Kira to come closer. Furtively, Marlena confided.
I heard that them songs was full of knowledges. She be only a small tyke, you know, but when she singed, she had knowledges of things that wasn't even happened yet. I never heard it myself, only heard tell of it.
Marlena laughed, and her feet took up the rapid pace on the treadle that caused the rhythmic motion of the loom. Kira nodded goodbye to her and started toward the path. Matt met her there, appearing from behind a tree where he'd been hiding. Kira glanced back, but Marlena was busy at her loom and had forgotten them both.
Are you coming with me this morning? She asked Matt. I thought you found it boring at the dyer's hut.
You mustn't go today, Matt said solemnly. Then he glanced at his dog and began to laugh.
Looky, old Branch, him trying to catch him a lizzie.
Kira looked and laughed, too. Branch had chased a small lizard to the base of a tree and was watching, frustrated, as it slithered up the trunk beyond his reach. He stood on his hind legs, and his front ones churned in the air. The lizard looked back, and a moist stiletto tongue darted in and out. Kira watched for a moment, chuckling, and then turned again to Matt.
What do you mean I mustn't go? I missed yesterday because of the rain. She's expecting me.
Matt looked solemn.
She not be expecting nobody. She be gone to the field right when the sun be coming up. Draggers tooken her. I seen it.
To the field? What are you talking about, Matt? She couldn't possibly walk to the field from her cot. It's too far. She's too old. And she wouldn't want to anyway.
Matt rolled his eyes.
I didn't say she be wanting to. I said they tooken her. She be dead.
Dead? Annabella, how can that be?
Kira was stunned. She had seen the old woman 2 days before. They had sipped tea together. Matt took her question seriously.
It be like this, he replied. He flung himself to the ground, lay on his back with both arms outstretched, opened his eyes wide, and stared blankly upward.
Branch, curious, nosed at his neck, but Matt held the pose. Kira stared in dismay at his grotesque but accurate imitation of death.
"Don't, Matt," she said at last. "Get up. Don't do that."
Matt sat up and took the dog into his lap. He tilted his head and looked at Kira curiously.
"Probably they be giving you her stuff," he announced.
"You're certain it was Annabella?"
Matt nodded.
"I seen her face when they tooken her to the field."
Briefly, he made the death face again with its blank eyes. Kira bit her lip. She turned away from the path. Matt was correct. She should not go into the woods now. But she did not know where to go. She could wake Thomas, she supposed. But for what? Thomas had never met the old dyer. Finally, she turned and looked back at the large council edifice where she lived. The door through which she came and went was in the side wing. The large door in front was the one she had entered on the day of her trial so many weeks before. The Council of Guardians would probably not be meeting today in the big chamber where her trial had been,
but Jameson must be someplace inside. She decided that she would look for him. He would know what had happened, would tell her what to do.
"No, Matt," she said when the tyke began to follow her.
His face fell. He had sensed an adventure.
"Go wake Thomas," Kira told him. "Tell him what happened. Tell him that Annabella has died, and that I have gone to find Jameson."
"Jameson? Who's he?"
Kira was startled at Matt's ignorance. Jameson had become so much a part of her life that she had forgotten the tyke wouldn't know his name.
"He's the guardian who first took me to my room," she explained. "Remember? A very tall man with dark hair? You were with us that day."
"He always wears one of Thomas's carvings," she added. "Quite a nice one with an outline of a tree."
Matt nodded at that. "I seen him," he said eagerly.
"Where?"
Kira looked around. If Jameson was nearby, if she could find him at one of the workplaces, she wouldn't have to search the council edifice.
"He be there, watching, walking beside, when the draggers took in the old dyer to the field," Matt said.
So Jameson already knew.
The corridors were, as always, quiet and dim. At first, Kira felt secretive and stealthy, as if she should make her footsteps as silent as possible, difficult with her stick and her dragging leg. Then she reminded herself that she was not hiding, not in danger. She was simply looking for the man who had been her mentor since her mother's death. She could even, if she chose, call his name loudly in hopes that he would hear and respond. But calling out seemed inappropriate, and so she simply continued down the hall in silence. As she had expected, the great hall was empty. She knew that it was used only for special occasions, the annual gathering, trials such as her own, and other ceremonies that she had never seen. She pulled the huge door open a crack, peeked in, and turned away to look elsewhere in the building. She knocked timidly on several doors. Finally, at one, a voice answered with a gruff,
"Yes?"
And she pushed the door open to see one of the tenders, a man she didn't recognize, busy at a desk.
"I'm looking for Jameson," Kira explained.
The tender shrugged.
"He's not here."
She could see that.
"Do you know where he might be?" she asked politely.
"In the wing, probably."
The tender looked down again at his work. He seemed to be sorting papers. Kira knew that the wing was where her own quarters were. That made sense. Probably Jameson was looking for her, even now, to tell her of the old woman's death. She had started out much earlier than usual this morning, thinking to make up for the day wasted yesterday by rain. If she had waited, Jameson could have found her, told her of the death, explained, and she would not feel so shocked and solitary.
"Excuse me, but can I get to the wing from here without going back outside?"
Impatiently, the tender gestured to his left.
"Door at the end," he said.
Kira thanked him, closed his office door behind her, and went to the end of the long hall. The door there was not locked, and when she opened it, she saw a familiar stairway. She had tiptoed down it with Thomas and Matt just yesterday during the storm. She knew the stairs would return her to the corridor above, where she would find her room and Thomas's. She stood motionless and listened. The tender had said that Jameson was probably somewhere in the wing, but she heard no sound. On a whim, instead of taking the stairs to her room, Kira remained on the first floor. She went to the corner where she and Thomas had hidden the day before, the same corner they had peered around to see where the crying was coming from. In the silence and emptiness, she rounded the corner and approached the door that had been open the afternoon before. She leaned next to it, her ear against the wood, and listened. But there was no sound of crying, none of singing. After a moment, she tried the knob, but the door was locked. Finally, very softly, she knocked. She heard a rustling sound inside, then the muffled sound of small footsteps on a bare floor. She knocked softly again. She heard a whimper. Kira knelt by the door. It was difficult with her crippled leg, but she lowered herself until her mouth was beside the large keyhole. Then she called softly,
"Joe?"
I'm being good,
a frightened, desperate little voice replied.
I'm practicing.
I know you are, Kira said through the keyhole. She could hear small, shuddering sobs.
I'm your friend, Joe. My name is Kira.
Please, I want me mom,
the tyke pleaded. She sounded very young. For some reason, Kira thought of the enclosure that had been built on the site of her old cot. Now tykes were penned there, enclosed by thorn bushes. It seemed cruel, but at least they were not isolated. They had each other, and they were able to look out through the thick foliage and see the village life around them. Why was this small tyke locked in a room all alone?
I will come back, she called softly through the door.
Will you bring me mom?
The little voice was close to the keyhole. Kira could almost feel the breath. Matt had told her that the tyke's parents were both dead.
I will come back, Kira said again. Joe, listen to me.
The tyke sniffled. In the distance, on the floor above, Kira heard a door open.
I must go, Kira whispered firmly through the hole. But listen, Joe, I will help you, I promise. Hush now, don't tell anyone I was here.
She rose quickly. Clutching her stick, she made her way back to the staircase. When she reached the second floor and rounded the corner, she saw Jameson standing in the open doorway to her room. He came forward, greeted her with sympathy, and told her the news of Annabella's death. Suddenly wary, Kira said nothing of the child below. Chapter 15
Look, they're setting up a dying place for me.
It was midday. Kira pointed down to the area below the window, a small piece of land between the edifice and the edge of the woods. Thomas came to the window and looked. Workers had raised a structure that Kira could see was to be a shed. Under its roof, long poles from which to hang the wet yarns and threads to dry were already in place.
It's better than anything she ever had, Kira murmured, remembering Annabella wistfully. I'm going to miss her, she added.
It had all happened so quickly, Annabella's death so sudden, and now, only a day later, the new dying place was being made. What's that? Thomas pointed. To the side, the workers were digging a shallow pit. A support for hanging kettles was being pounded into place at the side.
It'll be for fire. You need a very hot fire always for the boiling of the dyes.
Oh, Thomas,
Kira sighed, turning away from the window.
I'll never remember how to do it all.
Yes, you will. I have it all written down, everything you told me. We'll just repeat it and repeat it.
Look, what's that they're bringing?
She looked again and saw them stacking bundles of dried plants beside the new shed. They must have brought all the ones Annabella had hanging from the beams in her cot. So at least I'll have a place to start. I think I know the names, if they haven't mixed them all together out of ignorance. Then she chuckled, watching one of the workers set down a covered pot and turn his face away with a grimace of disgust.
It's the mordant, Kira explained. It smells terrible.
She didn't want to say the rude word to Thomas, but it was what Annabella had called her piss pot, and its contents were a surprisingly vital ingredient in the making of the dyes. The workers had begun to arrive early that morning, bearing the kettles and plants and equipment, while Jameson was still in Kira's room, describing the events of the day before. A sudden death, he had explained, the way death often came to those of great age. She slept, Annabella had, napping on the rainy day, and didn't wake. That was all. No mystery to it. Perhaps she felt that she had completed her job by teaching Kira, Jameson pointed out solemnly. Sometimes, he told her, it was the way death came, a drifting away when one's tasks were accomplished.
And there's no need to burn her cot, he added, because there was no illness. So it will stay as it is. Some day you can live there, if you like, after you've finished your work here.
Kira nodded, accepting his words. The old woman's spirit, she realized, would still be in her body. She'll need a watcher, Kira pointed out to Jameson. Could I go and sit with her? I did for my mother.
But Jameson said no. Time was short. The gathering was coming. 4 days could not be lost. Kira must work on the robe. Others would do the watching for the old dyer. So Kira would mourn all alone. After Jameson had gone, she sat silently, remembering how solitary Annabella's chosen life had been, how unconnected to the village. Only then did it occur to Kira to wonder, who found her? How did they know to look?
Thomas, come away from the window now. I need to tell you about something.
Reluctantly, he came to where she was sitting at the table, though she could see from his face that he was still listening to the noise of the construction below.
Boys, Kira thought. They were always interested in such things.
If Matt were around, he'd be down there underfoot, getting in the way, wanting to help with the building.
This morning, she began.
Then, sensing his inattention,
Thomas, listen!
He grinned, turned toward her, and listened.
I went to the room below, the one where we heard the tyke crying.
And singing, Thomas reminded her.
Yes, and singing.
Her name is Jo, according to Matt,
Thomas said.
See, I'm paying attention. Why did you go down there?
I was looking for Jameson at first, Kira explained, and I found myself on that floor. So I went to the door, thinking I might peek in and see if the tyke was all right. But it was locked.
Thomas nodded. He looked unsurprised.
But they've never locked my door, Thomas, she said.
No, because you were already grown, already 2 syllables when you came here. But I was young. I was still Tom when I arrived, he said. They locked my door.
You were held captive?
He frowned, remembering. Not really. It was to keep me safe, I think, and to make me pay attention. I was young, and I didn't want to work all the time. He grinned. I was a little like Matt, I think. Playful.
Were they harsh with you?
Kira asked, remembering the sound of Jameson's voice speaking to the little girl.
He thought.
Stern, he said finally.
But Thomas, the tyke below, Jo, she was crying, sobbing. She wanted her mum, she said.
Matt told us her mother died.
She doesn't seem to know that.
Thomas tried to recall his own circumstances. I think they told me about my parents, but maybe not right away. It was a long time ago. I remember someone brought me here and showed me where everything was and how it worked.
The bathroom and the hot water, Kira said with a wry smile.
Yes, that, and all the tools. I was already a carver. I'd been carving for a long time.
The way I'd already been doing the threadings. And the way the tyke, Joe.
Yes, Thomas said. Matt said she was already a singer.
Kira, thinking, smoothed the folds of her skirt. So each of us, she said slowly, was already a, I don't know what to call it.
Artist? Thomas suggested. That's a word. I've never heard anyone say it, but I've read it in some of the books. It means, well, someone who's able to make something beautiful. Would that be the word?
Yes, I guess it would. The tyke makes her singing, and it is beautiful.
When she isn't crying, Thomas pointed out.
So we are each artists, and we were each orphaned, and they brought us each here. I wonder why. Also, Thomas, there's something else, something strange.
He was listening.
This morning I talked to Marlena, a woman I know from the weaving shed. She lives in the fen, and she remembered Jo, though she didn't know her name. She remembered a singing tyke.
Everyone in the fen would know of such a tyke.
Kira nodded, agreeing. She said, how did she put it?
She tried to remember Marlena's description.
She said that the tyke seemed to have knowledges.
Knowledges?
That was the word she used.
What did she mean?
She said that the tyke seemed to have knowledge of things that hadn't happened yet, that the people in the fen thought it was magic. She sounded a little frightened when she talked of it. And, Thomas...
What? He asked. Kira hesitated.
It made me think of what happens sometimes with my cloth, this small one.
Kira opened the box he had made for her and held out the fabric scrap, reminding him.
I told you how it seems to speak to me. And I remember that you told me that you have a piece of wood that seems to do the same.
Yes, from when I was just a tyke, just beginning to carve, the one on the shelf. I've shown it to you.
Could it be the same thing? Kira asked cautiously. Could it be what Marlena called knowledges?
Thomas looked at her and at the cloth that lay motionless in her hand. He frowned. But why? He asked at last.
Kira didn't know the answer. Maybe it is something that artists have, she said,
liking the sound of the word she had just learned.
A special kind of magic knowledge.
Thomas nodded and shrugged. Well, it doesn't matter much, does it? We each have a good life now. Better tools than we did before. Good food. Work to do.
But the tyke below, she sobs and sobs, and they won't let her out of the room.
Kira remembered her promise.
Thomas, I told her I'd come back and that I'd help her.
He looked dubious. I don't think the guardians would like that. Kira again remembered the severity she had heard in Jameson's voice. She remembered the slamming of the door.
No, I don't think they would, she agreed. But at night, I'll creep down then when they think we're all asleep. Except...
Her face fell. Except what?
It's locked. There's no way I can get in.
Yes, you can, Thomas told her.
How?
I have a key, he said. It was true. Back in his room, he showed her. It was a long time ago, he explained. But here I was, locked in, with all these fine tools. So I carved a key. It really was quite easy. The lock on the door is a simple one. And, he added, fingering the intricately carved wooden key, it fits all the doors. All the locks are the same. I know because I tried them. I used to go out at night and roam the hallways, opening doors. All the rooms were empty then.
Kira shook her head. You were really mischievous, weren't you?
Thomas grinned. I told you, just like Matt.
Tonight, Kira said, suddenly serious. Will you come with me?
Thomas nodded. All right, he agreed. Tonight.
Chapter 16. Evening came. Kira, in Thomas's room, looked down through the window at the squalor of the village and listened to its chaotic din as workers in the various sheds finished their last chores. Down the lane, she could see how the butcher threw a container of water over the stone doorstep of his hut, a useless gesture toward cleaning away the clotted filth. Nearer, she watched the women leaving the weaving shed where she had worked as helper for so much of her childhood. Kira wondered, smiling, whether Matt had been there during the workday that had just ended. Assigned to cleaning up chores, he had probably been underfoot with his mates, making trouble and stealing food from the women's lunches. From her place at the window, she couldn't see any sign of him or of his dog. She hadn't seen them all day. She waited there with Thomas until long past dark, until the tenders had taken their food trays away. At last, the entire building was still, and the clamor from the village had subsided as well.
Thomas, Kira suggested, take your little piece of wood, the special one. I have my scrap with me.
All right, but why?
I don't know exactly. I feel that we should.
Thomas got the small carved piece from its high shelf and put it into his pocket. In his other pocket was the wooden key. Together they went down the dimly lit corridor to the stairs. Ahead of her, Thomas whispered,
"Shh." "I'm sorry," Kira whispered back. "The stick makes a noise, but I can't walk without it." Here, wait. They stopped beside one of the wall torches. Thomas ripped a length of cloth from the hem of his loose shirt. Deftly, he tied it around the base of Kira's walking stick. The cloth muted the noise of the wooden stick on the tiled floor. The pair made their way quickly down the flight of stairs and to the door of the room where Joe slept. They paused there and listened, but there were no sounds. Kira's hand, in her pocket, felt no warning from her scrap of cloth. She nodded to Thomas, and silently he inserted the big key and turned it to open the door. Kira held her breath because she feared that a tender might be sharing the room to guard the tyke at night. But the room, illuminated only by pale moonlight through the window, held only one small bed and one small, fast-asleep girl. "I'll stay by the door to watch," Thomas murmured. "She knows you, or your voice, at least. You wake her." Kira went to the bed and sat on its edge, propping her stick beside her. Gently, she touched the small shoulder.
"Joe," she said softly.
The little head, long hair tangled, turned restlessly. After a moment, the tyke opened her eyes with a startled, frightened look.
"No, don't!"
she cried out, pushing Kira's hand away.
"Shh," Kira whispered. "It's me. Remember, we talked through the door. Don't be afraid."
"I want me mom,"
the tyke wailed. She was very small, much smaller than Matt, hardly more than a toddler. Kira remembered the power of the singing voice that she had heard and marveled that it had come from this tiny, frightened waif of a thing. Kira picked her up, cradled her, and rocked her back and forth.
"Shh," she said. "Shh, it's all right. I'm your friend. And see over there? His name is Thomas. He's your friend, too."
Gradually, the tyke was soothed. Her eyes opened wide. Her thumb slid into her mouth, and she spoke around it.
"I be listening to you at the hole,"
she said, remembering.
"Yes, the keyhole. We whispered to each other." "You know me, Mom? Can you bring her?"
Kira shook her head. "No, I'm afraid I can't. But I'll be here. I live just upstairs, and Thomas does too." Thomas came nearer and knelt by the bed. The tyke stared at him suspiciously and clutched Kira. Thomas pointed to the ceiling. "I live right above you," he said in a gentle voice, "and I can hear you."
"You hear me singings?"
He smiled. "Yes, your singing is very beautiful." The tyke scowled.
"They always be making me learn new ones."
"New songs?" Kira asked her. Joe nodded unhappily.
"Over and over. They be making me remember everythings. Me old songs, they just be there natural. But now they be stuffing new things into me, and this poor head hurts horrid."
The tyke rubbed her tangled hair and sighed, a strangely adult sound that made Kira smile sympathetically. Thomas was looking around the room, which held many of the same pieces of furniture as the rooms above. A bed, a tall wooden chest of drawers, a table, and two chairs. "Joe," he said suddenly, "are you a good climber?" She frowned and removed her thumb from her mouth.
"I be climbing trees sometimes in the fen, but me mum, she hits me when I do because she say I be breaking me legs and then they take me to the field."
Thomas nodded solemnly. "Yes, that's probably true, and your mother didn't want you to get hurt."
"Once draggers take you to the field, you don't never come back. Beasts take you."
The thumb popped back in. "But look, Joe, if you could climb up there..." Thomas pointed to the top of the chest of drawers. The wide eyes followed his pointing finger, and the tyke nodded. "If you stood very tall up there, and if you had some tool, you could hit the ceiling and I would hear you." The tyke grinned at the thought. "You mustn't do it just for fun," Thomas added quickly. "Only if you really needed us."
Might I be trying it?
Joe asked eagerly. Kira lifted her down to the floor. Like a limber animal, the tyke scrambled from chair to tabletop, and from the tabletop she climbed to the top of the chest. Then she stood triumphantly. From below her woven nightdress emerged two bare, thin legs. "We need a tool," Thomas murmured, looking around. Remembering something from her own quarters, Kira went to the bathroom. As she had guessed, a thick hairbrush with a wooden handle lay on the shelf beside the sink. "Try this," she said, and handed it up to the tyke. Smiling broadly, the little singer reached up and thumped the brush handle on the ceiling. Thomas lifted her down and put her back into the bed. "That's it, then," he said. "If you need us, that's the signal, Joe. But never just for fun, only if you need help."
"And we'll come to see you, too, even if you don't thump," Kira added, "after the tenders are gone."
She tucked the bed covers around the tyke.
"Here, Thomas, put this back, would you?"
She handed him the hairbrush.
"We must go now," she told Joe. "But do you feel better, knowing that you have friends up there?"
The tyke nodded. Her moist thumb slid into her mouth. Kira smoothed the blanket.
"Good night, then."
For a moment, she sat there on the bed, feeling a vague memory of something else that should be done. Something from when she was a small tyke, like this, being put to bed. She leaned down toward the little girl, intuitively. What was it that her mother had done when she was small? Kira put her lips on Joe's forehead. It was an unfamiliar gesture, but felt right. The little girl made a small, contented sound with her own lips against Kira's face.
"A little kissy," she whispered.
"Like me, Mum."
Kira and Thomas parted in the upstairs corridor and made their way separately back to their own rooms. It was late, and as always, they were expected to work in the morning and needed sleep. As Kira prepared for bed, she thought about the frightened, lonely tyke below. What songs were they forcing her to learn? Why was she here at all? Ordinarily, an orphaned tyke would be turned over to another family. It was the same question that she and Thomas had discussed the day before, and the answer seemed to be the conclusion they had reached. They were artists, the three of them, makers of song, of wood, of threaded patterns. Because they were artists, they had some value that she could not comprehend. Because of that value, the three of them were here, well-fed, well-housed, and nurtured. She brushed her hair and teeth and got into bed. The window was open to the breeze. Below, she could see the half-completed constructions that would soon be her dying garden, fire pit, and shed. Across the room, through the darkness, she could see the folded, covered shape on top of her work table, the singer's robe. Suddenly, Kira knew that although her door was unlocked, she was not really free. Her life was limited to these things and this work. She was losing the joy she had once felt when the bright colored threads took shape in her hands, when the patterns came to her and were her own. The robe did not belong to her, though she was learning its story through her work. She would almost be able to tell the history now that it had passed through her fingers, now that she had focused on it so closely for so many days. But it was not what her hands or heart yearned to do. Thomas, uncomplaining though he was, had mentioned the headaches that afflicted him after hours of work. So had the little singer below.
"They be stuffing new things into me,"
the tyke had whimpered. She wanted the freedom to sing her own songs, as she always had. Kira did, too. She wanted her hands to be free of the robe so that they could make patterns of their own again. Suddenly, she wished that she could leave this place, despite its comforts, and return to the life she had known. She buried her face in the bedclothes and, for the first time, cried in despair. Chapter 17.
"Thomas, I've worked hard all morning, and you have too. Would you take a walk with me? There's something I want to see."
It was midday. They had both eaten lunch.
You want to go down and look at what the workmen are doing? I'll go with you.
Thomas set aside the carving tool he had just picked up. Kira noticed again, with admiration, how intricate the work was on the large singer's staff. Thomas had been smoothing the tiny rough spots from the worn ancient carvings and reshaping the infinitesimally small edges and curves. It was very similar to the work that Kira herself had been assigned, the repair of the singer's robe. And the entire top of the staff was undecorated. It was smooth, uncarved wood, in the same way that the expanse across the shoulders of the robe was untouched cloth. Kira's work was approaching that unadorned expanse. So was Thomas's, she realized. "What will you carve there?" she asked him, pointing to the undecorated part.
"I don't know. They said they'd tell me."
She watched as he carefully laid the staff across the table. "Actually," she told him, "if you want to look at what the workmen are doing, I'll go there with you later, but that's not what I had in mind. Will you go with me first where I want?"
Thomas nodded good-naturedly. "Where's that?" he asked.
"The fen," Kira told him. He looked at her quizzically.
"That filthy place? Why would you want to go there?"
"I've never been there. I want to see where Joe lived, Thomas."
"And Matt does, still," he reminded her.
"Yes, Matt, too. I wonder where he is, Thomas."
Kira was uneasy.
"I haven't seen him in 2 days. Have you?"
Thomas shook his head.
"Maybe he found another source of food," he suggested, laughing.
"Matt could point out where Joe lived. Maybe I could even bring something back for her. Maybe she had toys. Did they let you bring things when you came here, Thomas?"
He shook his head.
"Just my bits of wood. They didn't want me distracted."
Kira sighed. "She's so small, she should have a toy. Maybe you could carve her a doll, and I could stitch a little dress for it."
"I could, I guess," Thomas agreed. He handed Kira her walking stick. "Let's go," he said. "We'll probably find Matt along the way, or he'll find us."
Together, the pair made their way out of the edifice, across the plaza, and down the crowded lane. At the weaving shed, Kira paused, greeted the women, and asked about Matt.
"Haven't seen him, and good riddance, too," one of the workers replied. "The useless scamp." "When are you coming back, Kira?" another asked. "We could use your help. And you're old enough to be on the looms now. With your mother gone, you must need the work."
But another woman laughed loudly and pointed to Kira's clean new clothes.
"She don't need us no more."
The looms began to click and move again. Kira turned away. Nearby, she heard an oddly familiar, oddly frightening sound, a low growl. Quickly, she glanced around, half expecting to see a menacing dog or something worse. But the sound had come from a cluster of women near the butcher's. They burst into laughter when they saw her looking. She saw Vandara in their midst. The scarred woman turned her back on Kira, and she heard the growl again, a human imitation of a beast. Kira lowered her head and limped past them, ignoring the cruel laughter. Thomas had gone ahead. She could see him far beyond the butcher's. He had stopped near a group of young boys playing in the mud.
"Don't know," one was saying as she approached. "Give me coins and maybe I could find him."
"I asked them about Matt," Thomas explained, "but they say they haven't seen him."
"Do you suppose he might be sick?" Kira asked, worried. "His nose is always running. Maybe we should never have cleaned him up. He was accustomed to that layer of dirt."
The boys, slapping their bare feet in the mud, were listening.
"Matt's the strongest of the strong," one said. "He never be sick."
A smaller one wiped his own runny nose on the back of his hand.
"His mum be yelling at him. I heard her. And she throwed a rock at him, too, and he laughed at it and run off."
"When?" Kira asked the runny-nosed boy.
"Dunno," he said. "Maybe 2 days ago." "It were," chimed in another. "2 days ago. I seed it, too. His mum chucked a rock at him 'cause he took him some food. He said he were going on a journey."
"He's all right, Kira," Thomas reassured her, and they walked on. "He takes care of himself better than most adults." "Here,
I think this is where we turn. She followed him down an unfamiliar narrow lane. The huts were closer together.